Hey, Steve.
There we go.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. I'm very good. I thought I'd hop on here. Normally, I just wait for a group to join, but I haven't had a chance to interact with you. So thought we could take a few minutes while others are joining to just get to know you a little bit. What's your context? Where are you coming from?
Richmond, Virginia, mortgage industry, struggling through that like everybody else in the world right now, or at least in the United States.
Yes,
And
big changes.
yeah, just been
What kind of a team do you lead? How big's your team?
right now I've got about 12 people that report to me. So I've got partly have sales, I have marketing, training, development, and IT.
Oh, okay, that's a lot. So, is it your company or are you part of a company?
I'm Senior Vice President of Enterprise Performance. So
Oh.
I've been with this, like my CEO is, we've actually become very, very good friends. He's like a brother.
Cool.
Joined him 11 years ago.
Okay.
And yeah, we've gone through years of trials and tribulations, mergers, a variety of other stuff that I'll unpack at some point during these. But like most folks, you got struggles with the different teams and different personalities. Right now, I'm just trying to get, I feel like I lost my mojo. I need to get my own head back into it so I can lead the teams effectively.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Well, that's super helpful. We'll do our best to get your mojo back. Andy, Debbie, welcome. Thanks for joining. Just getting to know Steve. He's a new participant. looks like they're muted. Maybe they're joining here shortly. So mojo back. What's your sense for why the mojo left? How long have you been feeling this for? The lack of mojo.
We basically went through a merger 3 years ago, and the company that we went over to, we thought was going to be prepared for us, and they were far from it. So we get over there, very, very bad landing. COVID hits, everybody goes home. So you're trying to reorganize an entire company, and everybody's remote across the country. Then we have literally massive record-breaking volume.
Wow.
Barely held on to most of our, I mean, we held on to most of our accounts, but it damn near killed us.
Wow.
Made it through the volume, historic volumes. Basically, free fell the first 4 months and then managed to pull ourselves back up and actually meet our volume from the previous year in a 22-year-old company.
Oh my.
After that, you have the subsequent fall that you get from the peaks. And we've had to do about 4 to 5 layoffs at this point. The industry's just dying right now. Even one of the largest investors out there, I just found out they're shutting almost 70% of their offices. We are seeing it start to pull back up, we think. This is kind of usually where we start to see a little air come back into the industry, the beginning of spring and then throughout the spring market. It's just been a brutal 3 years, and trying to manage the different personalities and the different segments and get everybody to be able to work together and hit deadlines.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of people that work together. I was listening to your, or either listening or reading your post on Polarity.
Yep.
And two of the folks that work hand in hand are diametrically opposed. One is very rapid, very succinct and direct, and the other one, and she's born China shop. She's brilliant, smart as anything, but has no soft touch to her. The other one is a complete empath, very, very sensitive, very smart, good at her job, but these two have to work together, so it's
These are all things
fight the tears back from one and the complaints from the other.
we will these are all things we will get into
Yeah, this
for
is
sure.
certainly
Along
nothing I've never heard
the
before.
journey, that's very much the heart of what we do. So Looking forward to that. Mindy, looks like you got your camera working. Is your mute button better?
I did. It's working now.
Anybody else? Are your cameras and mute buttons working? Can you just test? Because Mindy was having problems, and I don't know if it was settings on my end or.
I'm good.
You're good. Got Jessica. Looks like you're good. And Davey and
I'm good.
Okay. Okay. Awesome.
Okay. All right, I'm great. Checking. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. You're good. Thanks, Renee. Okay. Awesome. Okay. I was just getting caught up with Steve. Steve, why don't you just say a brief introduction to yourself? And then we'll jump into the training today.
Hey guys, Steve Bittner, with Lenders Select Mortgage Group. We, basically provide mortgage services for community banks and credit unions. I manage about four different teams. So I help on sales. I manage the IT team, training and development in our marketing, and trying to keep all that together through the highs and lows of the market. And basically after getting kicked around the last 3 years, I feel like I lost my mojo. So hoping Shane can help me get it back.
Get that.
Well, yeah, you're among a safe group of people here who know your pains well. And we have some business owners, we have some managers in existing companies, and so a range of different participants, and glad to have you, Steve. So with that, you know, where we're going to start, what we're going to talk about today, for some of you may not feel like immediately something you can impact if you're not the business owner, for example. However, my experience is that even if you're not the business owner, if you start thinking about these things in terms of your own team and your purview, it has the ability to influence not only your team, but the company at large, so that it's almost like you become a local experiment where things start to happen differently and people start looking over the fence and wondering, how are you getting the kind of results you're getting? So I've seen it happen both ways. We're going to be talking about vision, mission, values, things like that, and why they matter and how to articulate them and all that stuff. So again, you may have an existing company with an existing articulation. That articulation may not be very good, candidly. You know, very often I find companies that do this haven't really done it according to best practices. And so what's fun is you can take some of the stuff I'm going to teach you and you can link what you're doing and how you're doing it to what the company does overall. And you get even bigger bonus points for that in terms of boosting morale and people recognizing and appreciating what you're doing. And so, you know, a big part of what we talked about last week is this, the power of the emotional system and how it governs behavior and decision making. And to be clear, we're not just talking about team members' emotional system. We're talking about your own emotional system as a leader, you know. So Steve just raised a very common experience, which is just that feeling of burnout and exhaustion. And we all know that being a leader is not nearly as fun as it seems like from the outside. You know, there's a lot of like double standards and expectations, and you get misunderstood a lot, and you get projected onto you things that aren't there. And you feel like you're the head of adult daycare some days, and other days you're feeling like you're really strategic. And there's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it. And so I acknowledge all of that. And today what I'm going to talk about is mission, a vision, and values, and how that can begin to inform the emotional system. So the, you know, simple metaphor that I would use is it's not at all uncommon for people to lose their sense of excitement and enthusiasm when they unlink from a sense of purpose. And so suddenly their tasks become rote and repetitive and meaningless and therefore much, much heavier. So one of the stories that I'm sure is apocryphal and I think I've told before is, you know, JFK wandering the halls of NASA and sees a janitor and it looks like he's mopping the floor. So he asks, hey, what do you do here for NASA? And he says, I'm helping put a man on the moon. And that awareness of this repetitive menial task contributing to something much bigger and more meaningful in the world improved the way that guy did that task. It changed his emotional relationship to the task. So the task went from being tedious and pointless and thankless to a meaningful step towards putting someone on the moon, which was something he cared about. And so that's a simple kind of story to help encapsulate what can happen to us too, as we as leaders try to just, you know, the myth of Sisyphus, we're pushing the boulder up the hill and each day it rolls down and you got to push it up again. And that whole experience really does become rote and difficult and overwhelming. And so what we'll talk about today is also designed to help you connect to what is bigger for you. So everything I'm going to talk about, you can go deeper in module one. But I'm going to highlight some things that are not found in module one that I need to put in at some point. I need to update some things. But for now, let me just share my screen and we'll begin talking about some of that. And then we'll open it up to coaching and questions. Let me get, where am I? One of these tabs is, oh, there it is. Start here. Yeah, this is good. So this is just a little sample of a company that I was working with recently. Well, that was 2020. I have another one that's more recent. Anyway, and one of the things that I want people to think about is when you're creating and leading a team of people, an organization of people, there are two major components that are informed by about six different processes. And I want to show you what that looks like. So the first one is that every team functions much better when they have a vision. And whether that's a vision that's unique to your sub-team or whether that's a company-wide vision, vision is all about the why. So Simon Sinek is very famous for talking about the why. The why is, what is your non-financial reason for being? What value do you bring to whom? What are you contributing for what purpose? That has nothing to do with making more money, but rather serving human beings in some form or fashion. Whether it's really direct or whether it's very indirect, everything you're doing is creating some kind of meaningful value in the world that serves human beings in some form or fashion. So that's what a vision, when, you know, there's lots of buzzword, management buzzwords out there. All I'm trying to do is tell you how I use these words. This is not some dictionary definition, but this is how I think about it. So vision, I think, is why what we do. For a long time, I didn't separate vision and mission. I thought it was overly complicating, and I like to keep things simple. But the more I worked with it, the more I realized there's value in a mission also. Because if you do a vision right, you're talking about things that have almost nothing to do with your business. They're talking about these big, high aspirational outcomes. So my company why is, we exist to cultivate the potential of leaders so they can grow organizations that are good for people in the world. That's why we exist. But it says nothing about the mechanics of how we do it. And so that's what a mission is designed for, how we do it. We do it through leadership training, coaching, scalable programs, and private interventions. That's our how. And we do it in a way that is informed by the emotional system, which is very different from a whole lot of other leadership coaches, right? So that's my vision and mission for my organization. Then you have values. Values are ultimately what we expect of each other, how we should expect to behave together. And, you know, this may seem sort of out of touch with your day-to-day, the day-to-day tasks you do. But it's really important to every once in a while try to get out of the weeds and just remember, what is it? Why do we do what we do? What are we trying to enable in the world? And what do we expect of each other? And how do we do it that's different from others? Then you have goals. Now we get into more business stuff. What is the target we're aiming for? Strategy, how do we achieve our goals? And then last is structure. How do we organize relative to those goals to support the strategy? Now, I share these six things because they form a basis for two things. One is how we make meaning, and the other is how we make money. And this is the thing that is missing in many, many organizations, is a clearly articulated expression of meaning making. We as human beings are meaning makers. And if you extract meaning from the tasks you do in life, those tasks get heavier. They become more laden with drudgery. And so it is really powerful. And organizations that understand this outperform those that don't, where you begin to infuse meaning into the process of making money. So let me try a different distinction. You know, businesses exist to make money. That is true. They need money, but that's not their real purpose. Their real purpose is to provide some kind of a value. So the analogy I always use is, making meaning is, we want to drive to San Diego. Making money is, we need to stop at the gas station on the way. We need gas in order to get to San Diego. And so that's one simple way of thinking about it, which is, where are you headed and why? And of course, you will need money to do that. And yes, you should be profitable, but ultimately, you should be governed by something that is more than that. Now, some of you on this call will resonate with this. You'll feel like, oh, yeah, that's totally what I feel. I love that. And some of you on this call may be like, I am not motivated by this. I don't care about some of the meaning-making stuff. Like, I get meaning from my private life. I don't go to work to get meaning. I go to work to do a job and get things done, and then I pour all my meaning into my work. That's totally valid. There's nothing wrong with that. However, the people you serve, they increasingly care about meaning far more than they do money. Increasingly, that's happening in the world. There is a greater awareness of, I want to do something meaningful. And so even if you personally aren't motivated by this, it is important to wake up to this reality and start to care. So module one goes into greater detail about how to craft a vision and a lot of detail about how to build and instantiate values in a system. I do not talk about mission very much. Mission is, I need to add a little training on that, but I'm going to do that today. So what I want to show you is, in this company, we had a bunch of, there's a whole process that I recommend, and this is one of the outputs of that process, and you can learn more about that in module one. I want to make sure I have time for coaching and questions. But here were the company-generated options. Virtus is a private equity real estate company. They invest in recession-resilient sectors of the economy. So we had three different options. Those numbers next to it are the number of people that voted for this. So we had these on a whiteboard, and people were voting, and so we had kind of a variety of things. And what I did is I took that and I said, okay, I'm gonna draft this in a way that's going to be compelling for people in that company. And so it's meant to reflect back what the team was feeling. And so we wrote, we exist to, and there's a formula, to and that. So we exist to what? This is the impact you want to make. And then the that, or so that, is the contribution you want to make. So this is what we're going to, I'm sorry, the other way around. This is what we're going to contribute, and this is the impact we want to have. So the contribution is, we want to foster thriving communities. That's what, why they do. Now, this is a company that goes out and raises hundreds of millions of dollars to then invest in various property asset classes in order for those investors to make more money. But they understand they have a higher purpose, to foster thriving communities that empower people to live better lives. So now they've linked this sort of highly finance-driven, numbers, quantitative process to something that's deeply human. And all their behaviors link to this higher purpose. So that's the vision, why we do what we do. We foster thriving communities that empower people to live better lives. Then what we did is we said, okay, if that's the higher purpose, I mean, there's millions of ways you could do that. That could be through grassroots organizing, community organizing, but you're like a real estate company. So if that's your why, now we want to figure out what your mission is. Your vision is this, your mission. So this is what they originally had. They didn't have a vision. They only had a mission. So we added a vision on top, and then we looked at their mission and I reworked it. So here's how their mission currently is written. Virtus exists to deliver, or was, superior risk-adjusted returns to our valued investors. This is accomplished by consistently refining a superior investment strategy within resilient, resistant properties, cultivating the highest quality team and partners, and always upholding our fiduciary duty. And that is just so much stuff packed in that it loses its power and meaning. Not only that, it's very, very, very finance focused. And yet you have HR, you have marketing, you have people that have a, can't necessarily directly impact this. So I pushed them to simplify and broaden the mission. So this is what their mission ends up looking like. We are hands-on, data-driven, curious investors who deliver compelling outcomes from cycle-resistant investments for all stakeholders. So what they're trying to articulate there is, now if the vision or the why is kind of very big, broad umbrella, and it's meant to be deeply meaningful, now we're going to talk about, well, what makes us different? Why are we unique? How do we go about fulfilling that? Well, one is, we're investors. That's what our business is. We help invest in properties. Two, we do this in a very hands-on, data-driven, and curious or open way. Not every investor does it that way. That's unique to them. And then a little bit of the why is still in there. It's to benefit all stakeholders. So when they invest in something, they think about not just how are we going to make money for investors, but how are we going to improve the lives of the people that live there? Because we know long-term, that's going to actually impact the value of what we're doing. And so now you have these two pieces, the vision and the mission. So that's one example. Here's another quick example. Lacuna, they're a startup technology company, and they're doing really advanced things with cities around the world related to new mobility. And so Lacuna exists to empower transportation agencies, meaning of cities and governments, around the world in service of the public good. So they are doing this because they want to reduce traffic and reduce accidents and make things better for people. That's why they do what they're doing. Well, how do they do it? We work directly with agencies to help them establish a new digital environment that will allow them to effectively manage the public right of way for the next 100 years. So you start to feel the quality and the tone of how a vision is different than a mission. So I'm just going to pause here for just a minute and open it for any comments or questions. You may wonder, Shane, how does this relate to my business or what I'm doing? And we can talk through that. So comments or questions?
Mike, I think, this is Davia. I'm sorry, I'm not on camera. I think that sometimes it changes from when I first started my company 10 years ago. And I'm actually looking into revamping it just because it just seems so muddled on our mission.
Yes. One of the reasons that that can happen is if you don't engage people in the process of creating it. And so there is a whole process I recommend in module one about how to actually build it so that it feels indigenous rather than top down. And the other thing is to have a clear differentiation between mission and vision. When you allow differentiation, it allows you to simplify both, and they each both target a very different thing. And so that can help so that things aren't quite so muddled. You can see how when you're just trying to cram everything into one container, like Virtus did in their mission, it was a big, cumbersome mess of words that you're like, this feels heavy, not exciting. And when you separate the two and then work to simplify so that anybody in the organization can make a contribution, it starts to feel lighter and more motivating. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Hey, so Shane, we just recently did ours. We did revamped ours, our vision, our mission, our core values, and we also have a philosophy that we have done. I'm on my phone, so I guess there's no way to attach it, but could I read it to you? It's pretty short.
Yeah. Okay. Love to hear it.
Okay. So our vision is, and you know, in case everybody doesn't know who I am, I'm Renee and I own Valley Christian Academy. It's a Christian school in Colorado Springs. So anyway, our vision is to provide a developmentally appropriate Christian education that inspires community involvement. So that's our vision.
Okay.
And then our mission is to provide a classical Christian education with a foundation in character development, academics, and creativity. And then
I love both of those. I think you've done excellent, in large part because you kept it really simple and really human. So just know that is one of the hardest things to do for businesses, that they tend to get so inside baseball that they get kind of technical in their descriptions. And I think it's really great the way you did that. And you kept it really simple. It's going to help people. Continue.
It took us forever. Anyway, then our mission is to provide a classical education. Oh, I already told you that. Sorry. Philosophy. Our philosophy is to empower and inspire students to become Christian leaders by teaching core subjects, encouraging character development, and leading by example. So that was our philosophy.
Excellent.
Then our core values spells the word lead. And right. L stands for learn. And it's supported by the scripture Proverbs 22:6, which I won't read the scriptures, but it has a scripture that supports it. And then we have the letter E is empower, and that's Philippians 4:13 that supports it. And then we have A, achieve, which is supported by Matthew 18:19-20. And then D, disciple, Philippians 3:14.
Okay. I love all that. I think it's okay. Great.
So we're on the right track.
I think you're on the exact right track. The next layer is to add behaviors to the values, which I'm going to describe in just a minute here. And Davey, I'll take one look at your mission as well, and then I'll get back to doing some of the training. Okay, so we believe physicians and healthcare professionals deserve to be compensated fairly and promptly for the care they provided to the patients in good faith. The services billed should at times be in full compliance. Okay. All right. Okay, so here's what I would say, looking at all of this. I would say it's going to help you, and this goes for everybody on this call, by the way. And if you just lead a team, even if you don't own a business, you can do this for the people you lead. You can create a team why or vision that is nested within the company's vision. And you can articulate it very simply in one sentence. And the formula, which you can see far more about, and there's a guidebook you can download in module one, but it should be, it is, we exist to blank so that blank. Very simple. We exist to, and the first blank is your contribution. So it's going to be a verb, some kind of a thing you're going to do, empower, invest, inspire, create, build, doesn't matter. You're going to do something. You're going to give an input that you exist to give an input. Why do you give that input? So that, or in order, or that impact, whatever that impact is. And that impact should be for people. So in some form or fashion, you're helping people. So if you're doing this within your organization and you're the marketing team, you would have a very simply stated, you know, vision that could be like, we exist to generate more creative ideas so that we can deliver high quality leads to our whatever. That's a kind of why. It's a statement that says, this is why we're doing what we're doing, even within a company. So Davey, my first encouragement to you would be, simplify, simplify, simplify. There's a whole lot of stuff in here that gets overwhelming for people. So the first thing I do is extract out of this the higher point, use the formula in module one. Then I would take this and I would simplify it even further and turn it into your mission. And your mission is only answering the question, how do we fulfill our vision? And when I say how, I mean reference specifically what business you're in and why you do it differently than others. And I wouldn't be exhaustive. I would be targeted. So in the same way that, you know, we spent a lot of time with that investment group and they finally came up with, well, we think we're data-driven, we're hands-on, we actually go to properties and really talk to people and take them out to dinner and understand what's going on. And we're curious. We're always asking questions. We don't think we're certain. And that sounds like really legitimate differentiators from other private equity real estate investment companies that might be doing this differently. So that's where you want to kind of get really, really simple. Maybe no more than three things that you're going to be different in. And that'll help you create a vision and a mission that's actually more compelling for your organization. Okay, with that, I do want to touch on values, and that's a more involved process. Again, all of this can be found in much greater detail. So if this is something you really want to take on, module one really goes into greater detail, but I just want to highlight a few things so you're kind of solution aware about how this works. So let me share my screen again. David, does that help, by the way? Sorry, there may have been a chat there I missed. Yes, Ram. Okay, good. All right, so now we're going to jump over here and I'm going to run through a few things. I'm just going to tell a brief story, okay, to help us get our heads around this whole issue of values. Oh, okay, just, you don't need the whole presentation. You can watch videos on that if you want. Okay, so here was one of the experiences that I had. I came into a company. There was a guy who effectively was a very, very well-known. He had famously invented a well-known technology that everybody on this call knows about. high up in a Fortune 10 company, very well-known company, very advanced. And he left to become the president of a much smaller company that was in a similar world of, we'll call it user experience of technologies. And when he entered that world, the stated values, the values on the wall that everybody heralded and championed and said, this is what's real, went something like this. We believe in ideas that are creative, radical, and ambitious. They also used the word disruptive a lot. That these are the things, radical, creative, ambitious. So he came in and he fit those perfectly. Within 1 year, he had lost all credibility and he effectively had to resign. And I was hired right as he was near the end of his tenure to see if we could save him. And he was just like, I'm not a fit for this place. And the reason was I went around and I did a 360-degree interview of all the stakeholders to figure out what happened, what went wrong. And what I learned is that their stated values were not the same as their lived or embodied values. And the lived or embodied values are what I call below the line, meaning below the waterline, meaning you can't see them. So unspoken values live below the waterline and nobody can see them and nobody really talks about them, but they enact them. So here were the actual values of this company based on their behaviors. Number one, every voice is equal, especially mine. So they all felt they needed to be heard. Number two, meetings are a great place to hide your feelings. Number three, spend time with us outside of work or we won't trust you. And number four, we care a lot about people. Why is that important? Well, the reason it's important is because radical, ambitious, disruptive have nothing to do with people and nothing to do with whether you go get drinks with me after work. So he got there and he was busy doing all this radical work. And they're like, hey, you want to get a beer? And he's like, no, I'm going home to my family. I've been working hard all day. And they're like, cool, no problem. Secretly, they're like, can you believe it? He didn't go out and have a beer with us. I can't believe that. So he'd run meetings. Nobody would tell honestly what was going on. They'd all go to the water cooler, talk about how things were really going. And he's left going, what the heck? I thought we had like a direct open conversation. He had no idea that was what was going on. So values in any organization, the more you can bring unspoken values to the surface, the better you're going to function as a team. And so the first thing is, do you have spoken values? And then what are the unspoken values? And you'll know that based on the behaviors of the team. And so a really honest conversation about values, which, by the way, values are ultimately behaviors, they will help surface the shadow of a team or an organization. They'll help you see sometimes the dark operating ways that aren't being addressed or directly dealt with. So when you do a values process right, and when you have the output of the values in the way that I'm going to recommend, you start seeing things show up differently. One, values done right make complexity simple. You know, culture is a very complex thing. But when you learn to define it in the way I'm about to show you, culture becomes very simple. So it's not this amorphous thing that's sort of governing us in an ocean. You're actually guiding it when you understand how to do this. Number two, creates a lot more clarity for people. They know what to expect. And number four, it makes diversity and flexibility possible. And I'll explain that in a minute. Gives you some freedom, but with fences. So there's an important thing there. And it creates a magnetic culture without creating a cult. So what is it that I recommend? How you state your values are the things that deliver the results. Southwest Airlines, probably the most famous, notorious group that knows how to do values. They don't do anything different than American Airlines. But if you have the experience of flying on Southwest versus American, it's a world apart. And Southwest Airlines does interviews in entire groups of people rather than individuals, because they have so many people that want to work there. It's one of the hardest places to get a job, and it's one of the people never leave once they're there. American, United, they've had so much trouble with teams and employees. So they have three main values, and there's a lot more to this. I won't go into great detail, but one is a warrior spirit. Two is a servant's heart, and three is a fun-loving attitude. And then there's concrete things they expect under that. But you can see the even the playfulness in the way they articulate their values. Now, you don't have to do it that way. But what I do recommend is that I'm going to skip through some of the case histories just so we can get to it Let me see here. Let me just make sure I get to the point I wanted to make most, and then we can get on to coaching. So here is a fairly simple. Oh, okay. Actually, this is it. I was in the right place after all. So Luck Companies is an organization. Their tagline is igniting human potential. Does anybody want to take a guess at what Luck Company's business is without Googling it? What do you think they do for their actual business? How do they make money?
The fact that they're in my hometown, does that mean I'm cheating?
Yeah, you're not allowed to speak on this, Steve. How dare you? Anybody know what Luck Companies does? Steve, why don't you tell us, what does Luck Companies do?
They actually do gravel, crush and run, rocks, basically.
Yep. They're an aggregates business. They're a modern day Fred Flintstone. They take big rocks and they make smaller rocks. They live in the top 1% of employee engagement globally. Their people, largely blue collar people, not all, are literally at the top 1%. They outperform most every company in the world on their culture and employee engagement. And the reason is because they know how to do these things. And by the way, some of what I learned came from the chief leadership officer of Luck Companies. He came down and worked with us, and I went to their organization and learned a bunch of stuff. And then we innovated on top of that. But these are their values. Now, their values aren't very creative. They're very simple. Commitment is not a very, it's not like fun-loving warrior spirit. You know, it doesn't have to be creative. What they did that is so helpful, and I ensure other companies do this when I work with them, they gave a definition and they give specific behaviors. And you can go through every one of these and you'll see what we mean. When they say creativity, they're saying deliver ideas and innovation that add value. You know, creativity in an aggregates business, what are you talking about? Well, there's actually lots of ways to be creative. Be curious, learn new skills, be open to change, explore and experiment. So you can see concrete behaviors, leadership, right? So those are the big ones. Aspen Heights is a company I was a chief leadership officer for. We did the same thing and we created effectively four values. And I'm just going to show you the big picture, what they all look like. Connection, performance, creativity, and leadership. Now, why do I show you this? One of the reasons I show you this is if you actually count the number of values, there's four, but if you look at all the values represented, there's about 35 values, right? You can see under performance, you have a commitment to excellence, accountability, responsibility, strategically, go above and beyond, own your results, recognize, celebrate success. So that's seven values in one quadrant alone. But the human mind can contain this more easily when they're subordinated under big parent simple values. So I generally recommend that you don't have more than four values in a company. And I recommend no, you need more than two. So three to four is ideal. And it allows you then to subordinate other ideas under these so that people can actually understand them. Two, I strongly encourage whenever you have values to install concrete behaviors, because it's the only way that you'll know whether somebody is living out a value or not, whether the things you want to have happen in your organization, in your team are actually happening. So this is critical. So in this case, we do, I recommend no more than four behaviors. You can do three, you can do two, it's fine. But a big idea, a simple definition, and a couple of key behaviors. That is going to make a huge difference. Then there's a whole lot of other stuff around how you institute them, rituals, tools, and processes, all of which can be found in module one. If you want to go deeper on this, highly recommend you look at all of those elements. But to start, I just wanted you to see this. And just so you know, Luck Companies has leadership and creativity as their values too, but they're defined very differently and the behaviors are different. So you can see, how you can use the same word, but the semantic range varies. So all of this stuff that I'm talking about, the mission, the vision, the values, the behaviors, all of these things are shaping that emotional system that is driving 80% of behavior and decision-making that will even drive your own emotional system when you show up to work day in and day out. Remember that emotional system is defined as how I feel about the people I work with and for, and how I feel about the work I'm doing, the task before me. How do I feel about it? Well, when you infuse it with meaning, you will feel better about it. And that's a big part of, Steve, back to your point, it's one way to get mojo back. Now, everything I'm talking about is like, there's a lot that goes into this, but you can even just take a very simple approach to it and start to see a measurable difference in your own sense of engagement. Like, I have a higher purpose that I'm doing this for, and I'm reminded of it. So those tasks that I'm tired of become less tiresome. Okay, so, you know, just to give you an example, this is real data. I instituted this process with Aspen Heights. In 2015 is when we started the process. Their employee engagement was at 65. Basically, the national average is about 60 for people who actually measure this stuff. If you look at Gallup, the global average is 30%, right? So they were hovering right around average. Then we benchmarked externally against the highest performing companies in the world, which was 70 to about 71-ish percent, something like that, every year. 2015, 2016, and 2017. And the group that we hired, Hay Group, to measure this, they basically said, expect the employee engagement scores to drop for 2 years, and then they'll start to increase after three. This is a five-year process. But because of the way we instituted vision, mission, and values, you see the line went straight up, and we outperformed the highest performing companies in the world. And it was linked to the way we installed the values as part of work. And so if you want to know how we did it, that's all detailed in gory detail in module one, along with a guidebook and a workbook so that you can follow along and execute that and implement that in your own business. So actually that, as a result of this, Greg Henry, he's the CEO of that company. He went on to become the Entrepreneur of the Year, Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year. I think that was 2017 as a direct result of some of this stuff. So I'm not going to go any deeper into this because I want to make sure we have time to talk through any questions or comments you have. I mean, I can go deeper if you want, but I want to make sure this is a chance for you all to talk and interact and get some coaching. So what questions or comments do you have? You're welcome to talk about this subject if you want, or you can talk about anything else that's on your mind. Steve, fire away.
Looking at that employee engagement, I think the top line was 2018, maybe. Have they done any recent surveys post-pandemic? Because I think that's one of the things that, I mean, literally a couple of minutes before this meeting started, my boss sent out an email stating that we're all going to be going back to the office. I live 6 minutes from my office, so I've been going there 90% of the time anyway. We used to have 30 people in the office, and now it's pretty much me and one other guy. And yeah, I'm an introvert, and it's affected me. You know, I miss having people around me, the interaction, the exchange of ideas, and just the energy. And
yeah,
I would love to know what their numbers are post-pandemic, because it's an issue, and it's something we've definitely seen. And I'm curious how it's impacted other results they're seeing.
So yes, there's always tons of surveys going on. I would say broadly speaking, there was a dip after 2020. It's abysmally low, generally speaking, across the country. Employee engagement's generally really bad. Most people don't know how to do the stuff that I'm describing, and many of them don't take the time to do it. And as a consequence, you're seeing quiet quitting and the great resignation. In addition to the rise of the gig economy, which means anybody making less than about $80,000 a year, you are at high risk of losing that person if you don't have some meaningful way of engaging them and providing autonomy. So it's very possible that a kind of unilateral mandate, everybody goes back to the office, you got to go to work, you could see a flight risk as a direct result of how you guys handle that. I wouldn't be at all surprised. There are going to be some people that just go, I don't want to be forced to do this. and I have other ways that I can go make money now. We have a labor crisis shortage. I know there's all the headlines about layoffs, and those layoffs are very real. I know that. But there is a labor crisis that is a long-term labor crisis that is coming, that is already here. And it's because of the generational banding, which is we are entering one of the smallest generations in our history, at least recent history in America. And as a result, we do not have enough workers to fulfill the roles, which means companies will have to reinvent the way they do things. And one part of what I teach is exactly how to do that, so that what you offer is way more attractive than pulling together Turo, Uber, Airbnb, and a few gigs to make up that $80,000 salary or more. You can create something that's way more attractive than that. And so just know it's a major issue. And unilateral decisions that just say everybody has to go back to work, you may be met with quite a bit of resistance. Even if it's something you want.
That, thankfully.
What's that?
He was more delicate about it than that, thankfully. He did kind of speak with everybody individually. And,
Good.
But I agree. Yeah, you can definitely drive off some good folks.
Awesome. Okay, good. Well, and it sounds like it may not be an issue for you guys. It's not an issue for everyone. So we'll get to find out in time. Appreciate your question. Good. Other questions, comments, either about this or anything going on in your business that you want support in?
I just dropped one in the chat, Shane, because I was knowing that I was not going to remember all of those thoughts. So I typed it out.
So guideline on updating vision, mission, values when you start a business, when hiring to get others involved, and as soon as course changes. So I wonder if there's an issue in deviating too much from original intent. Yeah, in general, you know, it takes quite a bit of effort to put together a meaningful mission and vision. And so I generally don't recommend you update your vision more than once every 3 to 5 years, and in many cases, 10 years. You know, the bigger the vision, the less often you have to update it, the more enduring it becomes. And oddly enough, in times of incredible change, the more enduring a vision is, the better. What you can update often and need to update often, and in fact, this probably has to be updated more often, are strategy, OKRs, things like that, which we'll talk about later, which is how do you go about setting goals and achieving those goals. That's distinct from the more enduring traits that kind of live above it all. And the reason that's so helpful to have enduring traits is it's like an anchor in the storm, that as things are constantly changing, they always have something to grab onto that has this immovable quality to it. Does that help answer that question, Allie?
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Danielle Kennedy, yeah, Steve, you did some work with them. The guy we worked with what was his name? I can't remember his name all of a sudden. He was awesome. I can't remember it, but he was Danielle's boss for a while.
I'm trying. Mark. We worked with her, and I've got our draft of our guiding principles. I'm trying to have one of my compliance folks send me our final one that we had. I'm trying to put it in the chat, and it's not working.
You want to email it to me?
Yeah, I will. Let me do that right now. Because we spent a lot of time on this.
Yes, it's time consuming.
It is. Quite a bit of effort. All right, just sent it. There's no text or anything. It's just the attachment. We didn't go deep into the values, and maybe we just didn't get to it. We kind of fizzled out, unfortunately, just with stuff going on in the industry.
Yep.
So this actually has edits shown in it. If I can get the final one, I'll pull that up. We'll share it with you later. But we've gotten away from this, and this is something the company I used to work for every time we started a sales meeting, they would actually read the mission statement. And I couldn't even tell you what it is now, but it was succinct and well done. And I'm thinking I might reinstate that at our sales meetings and kind of get us going again and try to pull us together. So I think everybody's scattered to the winds. Everybody's beaten up. There you go.
So you have to One of the simplest ways to re-engage this in a way that doesn't take a whole lot of time, which again, you'll find if you look in module 4, how to have better meetings, which we'll do a training later on that, but you can jump ahead to module 4. And also in module 1, I talk about rituals, tools, and processes. Rituals, tools, and processes are the things you do as part of work that enforce, reinforce, and co-create values. And so it's not like creating culture and values is this separate thing you go do. Creating them is separate and takes time, effort, and energy. But once they're built, they're living as part of your system can be done very, very easily. And all it takes is the first 5 minutes of a weekly tactical meeting, you do a check-in around values. And it's just a simple recognition. You just say, hey, everybody, I want you to take 30 seconds. Write down a person either inside this room or outside of this room who lived out one of our values. Name the person, what they did, and which value or behavior they lived out. That's it. And weirdly, you do that every week, week in and week out. You're getting recognition. You're reinforcing values you care about. If there's a particular value you wish they would live out more, you would simply say, hey, everybody, write down somebody in the room, somebody who lived out this one value this week. Go think back. When did you see someone who's living out that value? Start rewarding that. What gets rewarded gets done. So there, that's one way to start to reactivate this, Steve, is just to sort of pick a small ritual that you can do regularly and repeatedly. And whether you have a stand-up or a tactical meeting weekly or whatever, super helpful. So this looks like, yeah, guiding principles. This is fine. I like kind of you have some assumptions about the world, which is useful. I would say that this is two things. One is you have a philosophy. Every interaction creates a story. And I think these could be framed potentially in more targeted behaviors. And the reason a behavior is so useful is that it helps me know that when I act in this way, I'm living out a value. And that forms the thing we expect of each other, behaviors we expect of each other. And be curious about the opportunity is a behavior. You know, it's like a thing I'm doing. Clarify the why. Start with the end in mind. These are good sort of protocols. And when you identify these are the behaviors, it allows people to say, hey, I'm celebrating this person for this value because they did this behavior. And so you've done really well here. I would also say you could probably even simplify these more, like search for opportunities to innovate, grow, and improve. You know, that could be distilled into continuous improvement or thoughtful evolution, or, you know, like a simpler distillation, which is another way to give people an easier handle. You know, if there's too much complexity, the rock gets really slippery fast. So you're wanting to create as maximum simplicity. And it can still be playful. It can still be original, and it can still have like heart to it. But the simpler, the better, usually. One simpler phrase often helps people.
I think we did trim this down a little bit more. Again, once I get the final version, I'd love to share that again and get your thoughts on it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's really good. Great work. And so, Renee, does that help you understand kind of the next wave for your values? Is that the scripture is great. It's a nice definition, but it still has this opportunity for what specific behavior enacts that? What are those 2, 3, 4 things that you know will support that we can be accountable to?
Yeah, I was just looking. I was looking at the scriptures that support the lead, you know, our core values. And I was wondering if that kind of lined up the behaviors. So I was kind of...
Say that again.
So like, for instance, for lead, I have, or for learning, for the L, I have learned Proverbs 22:6. So I was looking up Proverbs 22:6 and what that scripture says. And it talks about lead a child or raise up a child the way he should go. When he gets old, he won't depart from it. Does that go with behaviors or is that something different?
I think that's more like you're creating the color of the value. So like the word learn has a huge semantic range. Okay. And the Bible verse narrows that semantic range a little bit so that you know what it's pointing at. But okay. They're both still lacking. Like, what specific things would you like to see from people that would allow you to point and know you're living this value?
Okay.
That's part of how you reward people in the system also, is you're using values to encourage certain kinds of behavior.
Okay.
And that's what organizations need. They need shared behaviors. So, you know, values, which are kind of company buzzword, really common. I mean, they're born of like the monastic tradition for thousands of years. Monastic traditions of every kind of religion have a rule of life. And the rule of life is poverty, chastity, obedience. These are behaviors that they expect of each other. And the reason you're a part of it is because you do these behaviors and you've chosen to join in these behaviors. And that's what makes us Benedictine versus Franciscan versus Tibetan versus Zen. You know, that's the thing that makes it unique and different and enduring for thousands of years.
Right.
Now, that can be easily abused and turned into cult-like, you know, behavior that abuses people. But the origin is actually really useful for creating hugely magnetic teams okay. that create people that want to be a part of it and would never dream of leaving. That's the stuff that differentiates from the gig economy, which is like, well, you can go out and have your autonomy and make your 80 grand and kind of put things together. But don't you want to be a part of something that's truly meaningful and making a difference in some way? And don't you want to be a part of a community that actually supports the things you believe in and you get to support them and what they believe? And suddenly that feeling of belonging starts right. to elevate and escalate. And when a company understands the power of belonging and meaning, it supersedes menial tasks, scary times in the market, repeating behaviors that are kind of annoying, a salary that isn't to the level you could get somewhere else. People yeah. will make choices to stay in organizations that have these big, meaningful, sticky values.
I love it.
And all I'm doing is articulating the best practices that I found repeatedly over time based on actual measurable data for what produces the most. And easily the most common mistake that gets made is over-engineered. So it's really, really important that you drive to simplicity as much as you can. And you've done an excellent job, Renee, of driving those first couple of things to simplicity. Mm-hmm. And your values are really tight, four key values. I like the Bible verses, given what you do for a living. I think it makes sense. But I think the last piece, and then I think you're done, not done, but you're done with the articulation, is concrete behaviors.
Okay.
One, and I would say, you know, for you, no more than three behaviors per value. Just okay. keep it as simple as you can. And so then after that.
So that would go like with lead, like the letter L, lead. I would yep. put for two to three behaviors under that. And then
yeah.
E.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, got it. And I would encourage your team to be a part of that. I'd say to them, hey, guys, we're going to have a, you know, 2-hour meeting and there's this word lead. What behaviors? I want you to write down three behaviors. Each of you write down three behaviors, very simple behaviors that you think support what leading means. You know, somebody might put down like have a servant's heart. Another person might be guide with compassion and empathy. And another person might say this and you'll go, yeah, that's great. You'll have 35 behaviors. And then it's your job to pick the top three that you like or to re-articulate them or to create themes around them.
Got it.
But if you have the team contribute to that, now you have indigenous values, right. which are way more powerful.
Right.
Than just sort of really thinking up big thoughts in isolation. And Davey, I'd say the same thing for you. Get your team co-creating this stuff and it's amazing. It creates this magnetic, powerful center. And then anytime you onboard somebody new, you indoctrinate them into the storytelling.
And so then how do you lay that out on paper? Like, is that something you send out to the public? Like I send out to the public on our brochures and stuff, our core values, our vision, our mission, and all that. Do you put the behaviors in? You do? Okay.
You certainly can. You certainly can. You don't have to. But you should definitely have that's considered a tool. Like I say, ritual, tool, and process. Ritual is a repeating action you do over and over again. A check-in at the beginning of every meeting where you recognize people for values, that's a ritual. Okay. A tool is a poster on your wall, painted signs, videos you make. We had squishy cubes that had every employee got a little squishy cube they put on their desk, and there was the four values on each side and then the mission and the vision on the top and the bottom. And then people would collect them and start building little structures. And, you know, there's like swag. Perfect. That's a way that you create a tool. Okay. And then a process is, how do you do onboarding? Onboarding is one of the most powerful processes where you can integrate culture, how you do performance management, how you do transitions or exits are all processes that support and enhance vision, mission.
Okay, got it.
And that's the other key thing is after you've done all the hard work of getting that articulation right, which is hard work, the worst mistake we can make is to not then integrate those into rituals, tools, and processes.
Okay.
Because then it's just, you know, on a sheet of paper in your drawer on your computer somewhere, and nobody sees it ever again.
Right. Okay. Perfect. I got it. Good.
Awesome. Great work. Good. Anybody else? Who else has something they want to talk about? How does this apply to their context or anything else that's pressing on you this week?
Just an overall question, since this is my first meeting, how far along are the rest of the folks here? Is this relatively new group? Have these folks been with you for a while? Are they all indoctrinated into module 4 and know it all by heart?
No, they're all at different stages. So everybody comes in at their own stage. And what I do is I do a 12-week cycle of presentations on each of these calls for 20, 30 minutes usually, and then about an hour or so of coaching. And so what you joined in is week 2 of a 12-week cycle that I just repeat. And so some people joined on like week, 10. And so they got a couple of pieces of content. You have access to all the content now in the modules. But what I do is on these calls, I will cherry pick a few key things each week throughout all of the modules. I don't do everything by any means. It's too much. But I just cherry pick a few things that I think are really important for people to be thinking about and aware of. So you're right on time. Wherever you jump in, you're right on schedule, and you will get access to all of it because it'll come back around after 12 full weeks. Make sense?
And it's best to send in any kind of questions we have ahead of time, obviously.
You can, or you can bring them either way. Yeah, I mean, sometimes people will need like, I can't be on the whole call, so I need to ask a question. And can I do that at the beginning? And I'll make room for that. Just let me know in advance and I can do that. Or you can have, you don't have to send questions in advance if you don't want. But if you have them, you're welcome.
After this class, do we still get to keep those modules that are online or?
Yep. You have lifetime access to all the modules and you'll have lifetime access to all the recordings of these videos, because there are some content in these videos that are not in the modules and vice versa.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah. I might be writing you a book for next week. I'll just see you. Because part of what, I've given you kind of the flyby of merger, pandemic, everybody working remotely, highs and lows of the industry. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And I want to clarify it and condense it in my own head first before I just spew it out here, but I need guidance on where to focus, what to focus on first, how to do so. We're kind of at a pivotal point where we've gone from being on the verge of being purchased by 5 different companies to our own company shutting us down. It's just been an absolutely ridiculous roller coaster.
Steve, I would say the starting point for you because of the kind of emotional state you're in, is going to be module one. Like, just start kind of, you don't have to go through all of module one, but like at least the first four videos of module one will start to, which we talked about last week, will really start to help you ask yourself some key questions, just because there's the inner game of leadership, which has nothing to do with all the external tactics and all the things. And that inner game is where we started last week. And that is, how am I doing? What motivates me? What contributes to my joy and my lack of joy in the work that I'm doing? And then I would bring your reflections to the call and just say, hey, I watched the first few four, five videos, I think. You'll have a sense, the first four or five are really more self-reflection about you. And bring what you were feeling, what you noticed, what you learned about yourself. And then I can help use that to shape next steps for you as we look at the program, right? And you might jump to module five next, and I'll tell you that if I see that's what's going to benefit you the most, right?
Yeah. So I've gone from the high of, you know, this is great, to I offered my boss my resignation. He did accept
it. Yeah, exactly. Well, then we definitely start there, okay? And then I'd be glad to work with you on that more inner game for you. I think it'll be less about external tactics to start and more about what's going on inside you.
Good.
And a couple of trainings coming up, we'll start doing some of that again. So I kind of alternate between like blocking and tackling and much more of the inner self-reflection stuff that needs to happen.
I feel like I'm dominating. But one other question is, with the Enneagram, I know that's part of, where does that fit in? How is that done? When is that done?
Yeah, that's probably done in 4 or 5 weeks, but I highly recommend you go ahead and take the Enneagram. Have you already done the Enneagram? Do you know?
I have done one previously and found it pretty interesting.
I mean, if you're interested in it, I would start now. I would like go to that bonus and watch some of it and really get familiar with your type and some of the other types. It'll be a major piece of the work that I do with leaders is self-awareness. And that tool is one of the best shortcuts to self-awareness, because it does something different than other tools that are personality tools. And the main thing that it does that's different is that it actually helps us understand the thing we've hidden from ourselves. And that's a really powerful thing when you get revealed what the motivations are behind the behaviors and preferences. So most tools will study behaviors and preferences. What I like, what I don't like, how I behave, how I don't behave. That's what makes me me. But none of them get to the heart, which the Enneagram does, which is, why do I behave that way? And because an 8 and a 3 might behave identically, I might even prefer the same things, but they're governed by underlying hidden motivations. And when those get surfaced, some of the weight of our patterned responses to life get lighter. And so I think you're going to find a lot of value in that too. Davey is asking if there is there is. I'm going to get the one I recommend. I think it's like $30. It's pretty inexpensive.
If you guys haven't done it, I highly recommend it. I did it with another program a couple of years ago. That's
what is it called again?
It's called the Enneagram. And we're going to go through it here in a couple of weeks. I'll do a whole training on it in a few weeks. Actually, if it helps, I can just tell you the exact date. That way you can put it on their calendar, make sure you don't miss it. Let's see here. That seems pretty far out. Am I doing this right? Let me just see here. Let me make sure. February 15th is when we'll be doing the, and so I highly recommend you take the inventory that I just put in the link there. Just the personal one is fine. Get the cheapest one if you want. There is like a more professional grade, which has like a 90-page report. I find a lot of it to be more than you'll need, but I think it's totally fine. So, Tracy, I just want to check in with you a little bit. You've made a few comments here that I appreciate you making, and I just want to hear where you're at and what's going on. And yeah, talk to us. What's happening? Oh, you have no voice right now. Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's do this. Do you feel like you have a path? Do you know where you want to start? I'm so sorry, bronchitis. That's no fun at all. Because I don't want you to feel overwhelmed. I want you to feel like you have like a clear sense of this is what I need to do next. Are you feeling like that module one and that emotional stuff you mentioned, that might be the right place to start? Are you typing by chance? Yes. Steve, you're asking, do I find that there are changes over a year with the Enneagram? Maybe say more about what you mean by that.
Just whether I should take it again or if the one that I've got from a year ago is probably still pretty consistent.
Oh, yeah, I think it'd be fine. Yeah, feel free to share. Yeah, and when you each take the Enneagram, just send it, email it to me. And I want to see what your types are. And that'll also help guide the way that I coach you, because that's a big part of this. Yeah, Tracy, I'm seeing that. Yep. For sure, for you getting that why. I know when you're in the early, you got a successful business, it's scaling, it's growing, you're managing a lot of the kind of blocking and tackling stuff, but it is important as the leader to really force yourself to get above the weeds and start to think about that bigger heart stuff, especially in the kind of industry you're in, which can first of all, it's primarily female. And so when it's more feminine in nature, meaning and purpose has more power usually. And also it is easy to lose sight of the fact that when you're in kind of the beauty or aesthetics industry, that people will tend to assume it's superficial. But you know, as well as I do, that there's nothing superficial about somebody feeling and developing confidence, and that confidence can lead to their romantic life, their work life, you have this ability to impact huge parts of people's lives. And even if, you know, we think it's just cutting hair or just, aesthetic service of some kind, that actually has real deep underlying purpose, that it is worth linking the behaviors to this, like, we exist in the world to make a better world in some way. And sometimes creating beauty is a thing that makes a better world. You know, it's not just like the superficial thing, and there's a lot to it. And so, I want to encourage you to do that for sure. Good.
I have a question, Shane.
Yeah, fire away.
So I've gotten there's been some developments in terms of the like layoff news. I know that it's going to happen on February 9th. So next week, I don't know. We'll see if I'm in this call. I might be like on pins and needles. But I got some interesting insight that there was a lot of turnover on the leadership team right before I came in. And three people in leadership roles left. And just this week, I found out that a lot of the reason they left was because they didn't have confidence in, like, you know, top leadership on how the account is being run, which is my boss. And the more I have just like, I mean, I'm what, barely 90 days in to this new role. And the more I see from her, the more I am skeptical as well of some of the choices and ways that she's communicating, and just the fact that, you know, she shared this layoff news with me before the Christmas holiday. So I've been sitting with it for like a month and a half. But she still won't tell us like anything about who's actually going to be affected. I don't know. It just, I think the whole thing is being handled very poorly. And now I'm finding out from the two people who I manage, who she has now looped in for some reason, that there's just like more history around things not going very well. And I'm wondering, like, I mean, part of it is just to kind of vent a little bit to all of you of like, this is ridiculous. Please just hear me so I can tell someone about it. But also, like, do I do anything at all? Do I just sit here for another week and just like do what I can, but not try very hard because it is what it is? Like, I just feel like there were things that were flagged, you know, on the leadership people who left before, you know, they had their exit interviews and they shared with HR and all that kind of stuff. So like they must, the company must know that this account is like not being run very well. I don't know. I would be doing everything a lot differently than my manager at this point. And especially knowing that extra detail, I'm just like, okay, I'm not a crazy person. Like it's coming from somewhere. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking. But that's because you've seen that thread of me saying those things throughout this, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, manager. For one thing, Allie, you've been in this program for long enough now to know what is good practice and what isn't good practice. Like you have both your own intuitive gifts, which are considerable, but then you've been learning real concrete hard skills about like what is good management and how do you lead through change. And she's not doing some of that, and that's very real. she's doing a lot of it in an incredibly high anxiety situation. So you know, I just want to bring you back to this reality, which is you were entrusted with information that is actually very good for you to be entrusted with, even though you can't act on it and you don't know with certainty what's going to happen. And the reason is because it's developing in you a key leadership muscle. And that key leadership muscle is tolerance for uncertainty and ambiguity and boundaries in the face of holding them. And so it is deeply unpleasant and very nerve-wracking. But actually really, really good for you. And so in addition to it being good for you, I also want to encourage you to find ways to discharge some of that anxiety. So whatever things you like to do that can release that energy, whether it's exercise or getting into nature or meditation or spending time with your kids or the things that will counterbalance you having to tolerate and be a container for that leader's anxiety. Candidly, that the reason the leader did it is they didn't have the capacity to know how to hold the anxiety. Basically, and if they were,
yes, sharing, that's 100%.
Yeah. And so now you're left to do it. Right. But I would say that's good. That's good practice for you. Cause that's part of what's going to be required of a leader is to be able to hold that. And the other thing I would just say, Ali, is, you know, this is a stressful, uncertain time and I get that, but I'll also just say you are eminently hireable. You are clearly very gifted and very capable, and people will see that and feel that. And there is a broad labor shortage in the world. Maybe in your industry at this moment, it's contracting, but there's a lot of jobs available in the world. And I just want to remind you of that too, that you're going to be okay no matter what. You are going to be okay because you're really good at this. And you've learned some really good skills in this program, and you have some innate abilities that I just want you to celebrate and rest in and acknowledge in yourself. So those are just a few observations.
Thank you.
Of you. And this is coming from somebody who works with a lot of leaders at very high levels. So I have some ability to gauge talent. So just
I appreciate
keep that in mind.
A lot. Yeah. And absolutely. I mean, to me, it's like, I agree with you. Either way, I'll be fine. There's lots of opportunities. I even told you a lot of the reason why I started doing this program is because I do want to start my own business. And who knows, maybe I'll get laid off next week and then it's a nudge and I get to decide, like, do I just start my own business right now and just go for it? Or do I try and find something else? Do I do some, you know, participate in that gig economy you were just talking about earlier, right? And just kind of do a couple of things. So who knows? I think whatever's going to happen is meant to happen and it will push me in the right direction. But at the same time, it's just like, can you just tell me what's going on? So I just know, like, this being in limbo is the worst because she knows all the things and she is purposefully telling us like this much information just so, like you said, she doesn't have to hold it all herself, but she's not telling us enough information where we can do anything about it or feel empowered or knowledgeable in any way. So we're just sort of like, okay, I guess it's just so awkward.
Steve has a good comment there for sure. You got some people adding some nice things in the comments. I want you to read the chat as well. It is also possible that your manager doesn't have as much knowledge as you think they do. It's entirely possible she is just as living in the unknown as you, and it may be the reason that she shoveled the anxiety down to you to manage her own anxiety. That's very possible.
Right.
It's also possible she knows more, but not as much as you think. That's also possible. You know, she could be hearing conversations. And I'll tell you, in my experience, and some of you could do this too, in layoff situations, it's very fluid. There's a lot of like debating and horse trading and conversations and trying to figure out what's right. It's not a very clear, like, oh, these three people are gone. We all know that. We're just going to wait. Usually there's not a lot of waiting once they.
Right. I mean, she's told us that she has submitted a list of names and that we need to start thinking about reassignments for things. And so we're like sitting on a call looking at a list of assignments and she's going, we might want to think about reassigning this one, but this one's okay. It's like, so you're telling us that that person is on the list? It's to that level. It's very weird. But yeah, I mean, I do think that there is fluidity and, you know, I know that she's trying to figure out if there are other open roles in the company that some people could go to. So maybe they're not on this account anymore, but they're like, I totally get all of that.
A lot.
So I don't envy her position. I think I've just seen layoffs before that have been handled much better than what I'm experienced now. So anyway, I appreciate all of that and it does make me feel a little bit better. It's just, it's that kind of anticipation that's just like hard to sit with. But yeah, whatever will happen and it'll be fine. Absolutely. I don't know what to do with myself. So yep. Okay. I'm done talking. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, we're glad you're sharing. We're glad to be a place for you to be able to share this. So,
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and read those comments. There's some nice chat comments there that are supportive of you. And I want you to take and receive that and go back into the world and build that muscle. Because people need you to have that muscle. All of us as leaders, we got to have that muscle. Good. Anybody else? Anything else pressing questions? So next week, so next week is, I'll just give a little bit of a preview for what we'll be talking about. And feel free to bring questions about this week to next week. Anything's fine. We can talk about anything. But next week, I'm going to be talking about one of the biggest things that leaders have to do, which is lead change. And just so you are aware of how I think about this, every decision a leader makes introduces change into a system. And all systems have a built-in immunity to change if you don't know how to lead the process. and the process that makes change an easy thing in an organization comes from a series of conversations that I'm going to share with you next week. I'll introduce you a process that I call staging the ascent. You're welcome to watch it in advance if you want, and I'll review it in a deeper way. That is the last video of module one is where you'll find it. But if you want, I go a little deeper tomorrow on the call. So that's what we're going to do. We'll look forward to seeing you all. Unless anybody, I've got five more minutes, happy to stick around if you want. If not, we can head back.
I'm good. I sent you my anagram.
Oh, you emailed it?
Yep. Okay. I'm curious to get your take on it.
I'll open it right now. I'm looking for, I'm kind of, oh, five. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. So here's what. Yeah. What's that?
I'm in deep trouble. I'm a five.
Oh, you're not in deep trouble. It's fives are actually very uncommon in corporate America. And the reason is because a five is like the owl. They're the one that can see 360 degrees in the dark. You know, they have this ability to perceive the thing behind the thing behind the thing. They know which question to ask and why to ask it and what those questions lead to. So they see vast amounts of complexity, and they are masterful at sort of ingesting complex data, information, perspectives, which means they're often the wisest one in the room. And they're also the least likely to move to action and speak, and the most likely to be overwhelmed by other people. So you may resonate with what I'm saying, that is very common, that there's a sense of like, it feels more comfortable to be more in the background. It feels more comfortable to be in the receiving, reflecting, thinking, strategizing than it is to kind of be acting and moving and creating lots of clarity and getting things done. It's not to say they don't get things done. They get a lot done. It's just, it's hard, harder for a five. So what you often find is like fives show up in like, I have a bunch of fives in like an AI robotics client that I have where you're dealing with incredibly complex problems they're trying to solve. But in most other organizations, you don't see as many fives because there's just, you see them much more in academia actually. And that's because they're much more reflective and business kind of forces a do. And so what that means for you is most likely is you have been kind of beaten into shape against your own preferences. And so you're probably very effective at all these things now, but they weren't naturally what you would enjoy. How much of that feels true for you of what I just said?
Good amount of it. Because a lot of what I do is project management, and we have to take apart, and it's much more complex than folks realize, between regulatory burdens, compliance, IT, timing, pricing. It's, you know, it's a lot of money involved in a lot of these things. And I do, tend to probably overthink on some of this stuff. And then my boss is like, well, why isn't this done? Like, you don't understand. It's complex.
Yes. It's the question behind the question that we haven't asked that we need to investigate and research and get and understand and strategize. And yeah, the joke I always tell is the eights on the Enneagram are ready, fire, and then aim. That's an eight on the Enneagram. A five on the Enneagram is ready, aim, and then finally aim. that has the ongoing joke for the five is like aim, and then finally we're going to go right ahead and aim one more time. And so it does get hard to get to that execute. So the work we do with the Enneagram is around what's the underlying motivation that gets in the way of instinctive acting for the five. You know, that's the call, the invitation of the five is instinctual acting, which is you act on gut instinct without actually knowing or understanding everything that there's another center of wisdom that you can tap into that allows for action more quickly and movement, forward movement. Whereas for the eight, often the work is around what is the thing that drives the movement so fast? And a lot of it has to do with intensity, just their own level of intensity. They don't even notice how much intensity they carry that just has to be discharged into the world. And so, anyway,
that's funny. My boss is an eight because we always joke. Yes. He's hanging on the yang and he's the charge and I'm the cooler. Like, yep. No, wait a second.
Yep.
No one did it.
Yep. So. And what's really interesting, this happens in romantic partnerships. This happens in work partnerships. Very often we will pair up with people that express our shadow. And the shadow is the part of us we haven't integrated in ourselves that is part of us, but we don't validate it. And so an eight will often outsource their shadow to a two or a five, which are kind of opposites to them, but are actually connected on the Enneagram as one of their types. So the way that an eight becomes more integrated, whole, and healthy is they integrate five-like tendencies. And the way that a five becomes integrated, whole, and healthy is they integrate eight-like tendencies, which feel like it's breaking them in some way. It like feels like it goes against who they are. But it's actually an integral part of who you are that just hasn't been integrated yet. And so it's not at all surprising to me that you would have a close partnership with an eight in your work life. It's also possible if you're a married person or you're partnered in some way that you might have another aspect of you that represented an opposite. And so I'm a three with a very strong two wing, and my first marriage was an eight. And I clearly chose her unconsciously to activate all the things in my two wing that were not eight-like. And I just outsourced it to her. And that creates problems. Like that's actually, it seems useful at first, but it's actually ultimately not helpful. So a big part of my growth was reintegrating the eight-like things that I needed to activate. And those of you who don't know, Cecilia is my wife, who is a two with a one wing, and she is on the call and she's here. She helps out also. Feel free to reach out to her anytime. She's at cecilia@chainhips.com. She also supports other parts of my business with private clients. And then she's in here to help with customer support issues. Amy is a great person. There's Cecilia. Hello. Hi, everybody. There she is. So she's usually on these calls, but sort of hidden, but listening in to all of you and thinking about what you're going through. And then we talk about it offline and she'll give me input and advice too, if I miss something or so. She's an important person for you all to connect with and reach out to. Let's see. And then Amy, my integrator, the one who does more operations back end. So if you're having technical problems or any of the back end stuff, if you email support@chainhips.com, that goes to Amy. And I'll see those as well, but she's going to be much more effective at getting back to you and more quickly. If for some reason you're not getting a response from her, feel free to reach out to me and I'll make sure that that happens. So awesome. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for the time and look forward to seeing you all next week.
Sounds good.
Be well. Thanks, everybody.
Great to meet all you guys. Shane, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Great to have you. Glad you're joining us.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
See ya. Okay. See you next
week. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.
You too. Ciao.